We all belong outside. We're drawn to nature. It calls to us. Whether it's the recorded sounds of the ocean we doze off to, or the succulents that adorn our homes, nature makes all of our lives richer, calmer, and frankly, better. Despite all this, we often go about our busy lives removed from it. But the outdoors is closer than we realize. With AllTrails, you can discover trails nearby or trails worth traveling to and explore confidently with offline maps and on-trail navigation. Whether you're looking for a laid-back walk with family or something more adventurous to get your heart pumping, AllTrails gives you the tools you need to get out there and find your outside. Download the free app today and make the most of your summer with AllTrails.
Today's episode of Gold Star Stories is a first for the show. Two interviews, one young man, told side by side. Private First Class Joseph Marquez, dimps to the people who loved him, was killed in a training accident in Yakima, Washington on April 25th, 2022. He was 19 years old. He'd been in the Army less than a year. The night before he died, he broke the rules and called his mom. He had a migraine. He told her he loved her. She told him to be safe. Today, you'll hear from Kristen Giordano, Joey's mother, about the dimples that gave him his name, the boy who'd rather watch the Yankees with her than go out with his friends, the call that wasn't supposed to happen, and the work she's doing now to make sure no Gold Star family feels alone. And you'll hear from Joe Giordano, 20 years in the Army, 12 of them at West Point, Joey's grandfather, and the man Joey was named after. One loss, two vantage points. Say his name. Private First Class Joseph Marquez.
Marine Captain Brian Letendry died earlier this month in an explosion in Iraq. He was 27, a husband and father, and he was buried in Arlington National Cemetery, a few miles from where he grew up. As America observes Memorial Day,
I am directed by the President of the United States and the Commandant of the Marine Corps to inform you that today, at 0530, your son was killed in action on support.
Not very many of us can accomplish our goals or our dreams, and he always knew where he wanted to go, and he did it.
A Gold Star family is one who has lost a loved one serving in the United States military. It's a distinction no family ever seeks, a bond shared through sacrifice, remembrance, and profound loss. I'm Nick Letendry, and I've been a Gold Star sibling for over 18 years. In those 18 years, I've learned that while ceremonies fade, medals are stored away, and life continues, the story doesn't end for the families left behind. This podcast is dedicated to remembering those who gave everything for their country and to telling the lesser-known stories, the quiet, powerful journeys of grief, strength, resilience, and hope that follows after the flags are folded and the crowds disperse. These are Gold Star Stories.
My name is Kristen Giordano, and my son is PFC Joseph Marquez, also known as Dimps. He was killed in a training accident in Yakima, Washington on April 25th, 2022.
All right. So can you tell me a little bit about him growing up?
Joey, so his nickname was Dimps. He was born with a full head of hair and made absolutely no sound at all when he was born, which was kind of scary. He's my second child. And when he finally decided to make a little movement, he was just loaded with dimples. He had like double dimples, dimples in his ears, dimples everywhere. So he was known as Dimps. He was quiet. He remained pretty quiet, unless you kind of knew him and were in his inner circle. He was kind of a quiet, thoughtful young man. Big athlete, a three-sport athlete. Well, four sports, really. Three sports in high school. Very hardworking, very loyal, very dedicated. He was just a light. He was the light of my life.
So you said he had, you have other kids as well. How many other kids do you have?
I do. My daughter, Alexis, they were just 16 months apart. She's older. So it's been tough for her. He was her best friend.
16 months is close. That's got to be really
yes.
tough.
Yeah.
So was military service part of your family before he joined? Was that something that he was raised around?
Yes. Yeah, so pretty much everyone in my family has served. I grew up at West Point. My dad is a retired master sergeant. So we were at West Point until 1993 when I was in high school. My dad retired. My older brother also is an Army veteran, and my younger brother is still currently Baltimore PD, Baltimore City PD. So ever since Joey was little, we always would still go to West Point. We have a lot of family around there still. He just always wanted to go into the Army and just kind of be like my dad.
That dad Kristen just mentioned, that's Joe Giordano. 20 years in the Army, 12 of them stationed at West Point. Joey's grandfather, and he remembers the exact day an 8-year-old boy decided he was going to fly.
My wife and Kristen took Joey and his daughter Alexis to a tour of West Point, and my wife always loves going down by the water. So she took them down by the water, and it just so happened that they were having helicopter exercises where the cadets were learning how it was to ride on a helicopter. So the helicopters would land, 3 or 4 of them would get on, they'd go up and fly, and they'd come back. And Joey was absolutely mesmerized. He did not want to leave. And he told both his mother and his grandmother that he was going to join the Army and fly and jump out of helicopters. And I think he was probably a teenager.
He could have done a lot of things. Like I said, he was a really good athlete. He got a couple offers to go to a couple different schools, but he just was set on going into the Army, and it was just his lifelong dream. It's what he always wanted to do.
He was a great athlete, great baseball player, and he had broken his leg playing baseball, and it took a long time to heal. And we had a hell of a time getting him through all the military medical situations and waivers that he could actually be accepted to go into enlistment. It took a long time to do that. A lot of doctor's visits, a lot of paperwork, but he was extremely persistent, never gave up, and said that's what he wanted to do. So we were able to help him to do that.
He went to Missouri for his training. And because of COVID, I wasn't able to go to his basic graduation, but I was able to go to his AIT graduation, which was really, really cool. We're both like big sports fans, so we were gonna like go to a baseball game and like do all this stuff because he was supposed to have a couple days with me. I'm sitting at the airport at BWI and he FaceTimes me and he's like, "Ma, guess what?" I'm like, "What?" He's like, "I just got my orders." And I'm like, "Oh, great. Where are you going?" He's like, "I have to leave a couple hours after graduation." And I'm like, "What?" So I still flew all that way. I got to spend like 4 hours with him. And then he had to get on the plane and go to Washington State, which is where his first and only duty station was.
What was his job in the Army?
He was 88 Mike, and then he also was cross-trained for 92F. So he drove the super big vehicles. And then his cross-training was like with fuel and ammo, because he was learning like how to be the one to like deliver and do all that stuff when they were out in the field. Like I said, because his unit was getting ready to deploy in Korea and they were going to do that. He was only 19. I was the youngest member of his unit and he was like the number one driver. He was like the only one that was cross-trained. He just kept like doing more and more, just like super competitive. Like he had to be the best at everything. Yeah, so he was, he was 19, he was already a PFC. I mean, he was just climbing, you know, climbing up pretty quick. Joey was like in school, he wasn't like the smartest kid, like grade-wise, but all his teachers loved him so much, and he was like so charming, and he was like so helpful that he always like wound up having like better grades than he really should have, because he was like not a scholar, and he like didn't like to do his homework. And plus also like with the sports, I think too, they always like didn't want him to like not get to do what he wanted to do. So I kind of saw that continue in the military, because the soldiers that came, you know, when he was killed to his services, they all kind of had these similar stories. Like when they were out driving, they're not supposed to be on their cell phones at all for any reason. They called Joey Kez, and they would be like, "Kez, always on his phone. Like we could see him with his signal." And they're like, "Kez, get off your phone. Like stop calling your mom. Like stop FaceTiming your mom," you know. But like he wasn't supposed to do it, but like they kind of let him do it, which wound up kind of being a blessing for me, because I actually got to speak to him like the night before, even though he wasn't supposed to be on his phone. He wasn't supposed to call me because they were out training. He actually did a call me the night before, thank God. So I did get to speak to him right before.
Can you tell me a little bit about the call before? I know that some of the families I speak to are like, you know, there's just something weird about that call. There was something different. Did you get a weird feeling about that when you look back on it now?
Well, so in early April, when they first went out into the desert to train, Joey had texted me a picture of one of his buddy's vehicles that had rolled over. And they weren't hurt, but the vehicle had rolled over. And he was like very concerned, like kind of with the conditions out there and like with the training, because they were like having to get up at like 3 and 4 in the morning and like using night goggles. And the conditions out there, the reason they train out there, it's because it's very similar to the Middle East. It's like very dry, it's very dusty, it's very rocky. And these are like big, huge vehicles, you know, that weigh how many tons, and they're top heavy because, you know, they go up to shoot. So like everything's up there and the hatch is up there. So he had sent me this text and he was like, oh, my buddy, you know, flipped his vehicle. And I'm like, oh, is everybody okay? And he was like, yeah. He was like, but, you know, kind of like the training conditions like aren't very good. So he was, like I said, always he was the number one driver. Like he drove his LT. There's a 3-hour time difference because I'm in Delaware. So he texted me and was like, Mom, don't go to bed. I'm going to call you. And I wasn't expecting to hear from him because, you know, typically they can't really be on their phones that much during night. I would hear from him when I wasn't supposed to when he was out driving. He was not supposed to be on his phone. So he was like, don't go to bed. I'm gonna call you. And I'm like, okay. So it was probably like 10 o'clock my time, like 7 o'clock his time. And he sounded like really, really, really tired. Like I could just hear it in his voice. He just didn't sound like great. And he would occasionally get like a migraine. And he kind of felt like he was getting a migraine coming on just from like not sleeping and, you know, having to get up and, you know, straining your eyes, you know, with the night vision. So I talked to him for just a few minutes and someone came in, told him to get off his phone. You know, he had to get off his phone. And I always said to him, in closing, I always said, you know, be safe. I love you. So I was like, all right, Joe, I was like, be safe. You know, I love you. And he's like, I love you too, Mama. And that was it. So, the next morning I just got up and just carried on, you know, my normal schedule, went to work. And I usually heard from him around noon my time. And at the time, the job I had, if the weather was nice, I'd always try to get out and walk around noon, because then if I heard from him, I could talk to him because I wasn't in the office. So I didn't hear from him. But my daughter called me and she had woken up with a migraine and she was throwing up and she felt really sick. And she said, Mom, she said, I keep trying to call Joe, but he's not answering. And I'm like, oh, well, like he's training, like, you know, he's not on his phone today. I talked to him last night, like he's fine. And I was like thinking it was kind of weird that she said she had a migraine when he said he had a migraine. So I got a couple like notifications on my phone from a couple like names I didn't recognize on Facebook, of like people were trying to like add me as a friend or like send me a message on Facebook. And I didn't really think anything of it. But a couple weeks beforehand, Joey had told me that he had had some of his buddies, like where people were like using their social media, pretending they were them. So he had actually said to me, he's like, Mom, if you get any like friend requests, like if guys in uniform and you don't know who they are and they're not my buddies, like just don't accept it. So I just thought it was that. So like I said, I was just carrying on. I came home after work. It was like really just like beautiful weather because it was April, and I went out and actually had walked again waiting for my husband to get home. And I was on the phone with my mom because my mom was over at my brother's house because my brother and his wife were in Vegas for my sister-in-law's 40th birthday. So my mom was with my nephews. So I talked to my mom again, and then I came home, my husband was home, and we were sitting in the living room. And my stepson, who's our youngest of the four kids, was a senior in high school at the time. JP kind of looked out the window and he saw a car pull up and he saw two officers in blue get out of the car. And he was like, oh my God, look at this. Are these like Navy recruiters coming up to the house? Because they were trying to recruit Tyler. And I'm like, what And I just knew, like, instantly, I just knew, like, this was not good. But your mind plays funny tricks on you. So in my mind, I'm thinking there's another rollover and Joey's hurt. And this is someone from his unit and they're coming to get me and they're going to fly me out there because he's in the hospital. Because I knew that there had just been a rollover a couple weeks before. You know, they answered, you know, JP, my husband, was the one who answered the door. And I was standing there and, like, already, like, in my mind, I'm like, okay, I got to call my boss. Like, I'm going to Washington. Like, I got to make plans. Like, I got to tell my daughter. Like, never met, like, thinking in a million years, like, what they were actually there for. And, you know, of course, you know, they tell you while they're there, and they don't really obviously have any details. They just tell you, you know, someone will be in touch. The closest military base to me is Fort Meade, which is in Maryland, but Dover Air Force Base is right here. So I believe the chaplain was from Dover Air Force Base, but I'm still kind of fuzzy on all of that. And I am, like, in kind of, like, in shock. Like, I'm not even, like, really crying. And I'm just thinking, like, oh no, like, I have to tell my daughter. Like, what am I going to tell my daughter? You know, and, you know, then everything, you know, that happened afterward.
Kristen would find out what happened the next evening. Her father, the soldier in the family, can tell that part more clearly than most.
His unit was out on a training exercise. They were going to be deployed to Korea. And the last day of their exercise, he was in a vehicle. And they were at about 4 o'clock in the morning finishing up. And the vehicle rolled over and he was killed. He was sitting up in a turret and it rolled over and he was killed.
How were you notified?
My daughter called my wife about 6 o'clock the evening that Joey was killed. And actually myself and my son, I teach a entrepreneurship program for veterans who want to start their own business. And I was in class with my son, and my wife called me during class to tell me that Joey had died. So probably about 7 o'clock the evening he had died or so.
What is your first move from there when you hear that news? Is it hurry up and get to your daughter?
Get my wife to my daughter. Actually, my son and his wife were out in Las Vegas on their anniversary, and my wife was up at my son's house. So I had to make arrangements to go up there and bring her down to my daughter's house. And then I went up and stayed with my grandsons for a couple of days so that my wife could be with my daughter at that time.
So how did you end up telling your daughter? Was she home at the time or was she out?
Well, if I could go back in time, I probably would have done a little bit different. So my husband, we weren't married yet at the time, we were engaged. My husband was like, let me go to her work. And I'm like, no, like, I don't want you to go to her work, like, do this to her at work. I'm like, just tell her she needs to come home. And she only worked a couple minutes away from, you know, the house. So he reached out to her because I'm, of course, having to call, you know, my mom and my brothers, my dad. So he reached out to her and she calls me immediately and she goes, it's Joey, isn't it? And I'm like, Alexis, I just need you to come home. And she's like, it's my brother, right? She just come home. So she already knew. I think she had known somehow throughout the day, even, like I said, with her not feeling well and just having this need to call her brother. So she told me as she was driving here just a few minutes, she's calling her brother, calling her brother, calling her brother, just calling his phone like nonstop. And of course, he's not answering. So she gets here to the house and she just like barely stepped in the front door. She wouldn't even like come all the way in. And I'm like, she could tell, you know, obviously, you know, seeing me and JP, and she just left. And she actually drove to a little league field right by us. You know, because of, like I said, like all the sports and all the baseball, she actually just kind of drove there and she just kind of stayed there for a while until she was like, I don't want to say okay enough, but able to, you know, come back, you know, and be able to talk to me, you know, about it. And it was really strange because everyone in my family, we live probably about an hour. I probably live about an hour apart from everybody. But my brother and his wife were in Las Vegas, so nobody was able to get a hold of them. They had done like a spa day, and so they had like these little lockers where they put their phone in. So we weren't able to get a hold of them. Like my mom and dad only live an hour from me, but my mom was over at my brother's house with my nephews. My dad has a business, a veterans business, and he was actually teaching a class. So he didn't have his phone on him. And then my older brother was actually with him teaching the class. So I couldn't get a hold of anybody except for my mom.
Wow.
So, you know, I wasn't able to like tell everybody what's going on. And then the really bad part about social media is my daughter, in her grief, immediately posted something. So then all of my son's friends and my friends and all these people are like reaching out to me. And I'm just trying to get a hold of my family, you know, who's most important, you know, obviously to let them know what's going on. So it was just kind of this really weird, chaotic, like hectic. And you're like in shock already, and you're having to like talk to people and answer the phone and all these texts. And you're just like, you still haven't even like really absorbed like what's happened, like what's going on.
Well, I'm sure everybody's wanting answers from you. Mm-hmm. And you're like, I don't know. Nobody's told me because they've all got news so quickly, right?
And we still don't really know the full story of what happened. So I know what Joey's friends told me that were there, which is different than kind of like the process you go through, like getting the reporting and, you know, meeting with everybody and things like that. So when it's a really shocking death like that and you don't get to say goodbye, because we didn't get to see Joey. He was in such bad shape. We didn't get to see him to like say goodbye to him. So you kind of never really get that closure. You never really get that like peace. And honestly, 3 years later, I still kind of hang this hope in the back of my mind sometimes, like, oh, Joey's on a secret mission. Like he's just going to come walking through the door like these videos that you see. Because, you know, you don't ever really get to say goodbye, unfortunately.
I've had that same thought process so many times, the secret mission thing, and it wasn't until I connected with families at TAPS and talked to other siblings and stuff that said the same exact thing that I was like, okay, cool, I'm not crazy. Like that's, you know, everybody's looking for any sort of just thread of hope, you know what I mean, anything just to keep it alive. And that was, it was comforting for me to hear that the first time, but it also hurt, you know what I mean, because it's like, damn,
I know.
I'm not the only one that had that great idea, you know?
Well, the only thing I can tell you is I know that even if he was on a secret mission, Joey could not have not talked to me all this time. So I think he still would have found a way to get a hold of me. So that's kind of like, you know, my reality check with that. But, you know, TAPS is a wonderful, wonderful resource. And I immediately put myself like in grief, you know, counseling also with a group therapist. And, you know, she just said, when it is a shock like that, even if it's not military, even if it's like a car accident or something, you know, in the civilian world, people feel that way. They feel like it didn't really happen. You know, it's almost like your brain doesn't let you realize or like acknowledge, because probably it's too painful, like for us to wrap our heads around. So it's almost like you kind of have this little switch that goes off. That's just like, oh yeah, yeah, that's what they're telling me happened. But you know, maybe it didn't, you know.
For his funeral, his first sergeant accompanied his body back, and they had 10 members of his unit attend the funeral. So it was really good to be able to meet and talk to some members of his unit who Joey had talked to us about. A couple we had seen him on videos, but to spend some time, and a couple members of his unit got up and gave their memories of stories of Joey's that not all of us knew about. So that was really nice to hear that, get a little bit of insight that you really don't that Joey wouldn't tell you about things he did, how he reacted, what a great soldier and teammate he was.
I'm actually a mentor now for TAPS too. I actually have my first mentee. So it changed my entire path of my entire life. So before Joey was killed, I worked for the state. I worked for a local school district doing HR. And I wasn't able to go back to work for a while. I stayed home for a while. But it changed everything about like what I do, like with my job, Nudy. And now I just kind of have this need just to like serve and like give back and like try to help and try to contribute and try to be there like for other families that go through like what we go through. I do an annual 5K for Joey, a Memorial 5K. It's the PFC Joseph Dimps Marquez annual 5K. I do it every August down at the beach in Delaware in the Tanger Outlets. There's this really nice like state park trail that's like right there. So we just kind of hop on and do that. And so far the funds I haven't raised a lot of funds because it takes a while to get a 5K like really big. Like this year, I think we had 127 runners, which is the biggest we've had, but still not really big enough to really do a lot. But it's getting bigger and bigger every year. So right now, all the funds have been going towards our Woody Williams project. But like I said, we're almost done with that. We should be done. We'll be done fundraising by the end of this year. And my goal is hopefully to do the dedication around Memorial Day, if it's done in time. If not, his birthday's in June. So then we would try to do it in June if we could. But another thing that I'm doing is I'm starting a foundation. It's called the JM42 Foundation. I just started filing my paperwork. And I think what I want to do with that is I want to give support to the soldiers that are still serving and their families. Like one thing that I did, like, so I told you, like, Joey's unit was going to Korea. So the poor soldiers that had to go through all of that. So pretty quickly after he was killed, they all went to Korea and they were there for a year. So I just did like little things while they were over there, like around Christmas. Like I just sent them like a bunch of care packages and I got some of their information like for their kids. And like I sent their kids like little things for Christmas because I knew like their dads weren't there because they were over in Korea. So kind of my idea with the foundation is maybe to do stuff like that. Maybe just do support, but not just for military, also for first responders too. Because they're the same with the sacrifice that they give. I mean, they may not be deploying and going overseas, but, you know, when there's really bad stuff going on in the community, for example, like my brother, like Baltimore PD, like when Freddie Gray was going on, I know my brother wasn't home for days, you know. And the fire, you know, the fire department's the same thing. So maybe start a foundation where I can just maybe give some support to those who are serving plus their families that serve. So I've done a lot of like news and press with that. And then my family is doing a Woody Williams monument in Delaware down in Sussex County in the Veterans Cemetery. And we just started fundraising. We just got the site and started fundraising last year and we're almost done. You have to fundraise about 100,000, 80 to 100,000 your piece. And we're almost done because my dad is like really great at like getting grants. And, you know, so I've done like a lot of media and press with that. So I feel like I have really been able to keep Joey like relevant. Like I feel like I've been able to like keep him alive over the past 3 years, but I feel like a lot of people don't have that. They don't have that opportunity and they don't have maybe the means to do that. You know, they don't have the money to do like a memorial or a brick or a bench, or, you know, they don't have the community to do like a 5K like I do. You know, so I always am interested to like try to reach out and help them and like get them involved. So like any stuff I get invited to, like as a Gold Star mom or, you know, like with my work that I do now, I make sure I extend that invitation to all those families because some of them I don't think to like really get that. Or maybe it happened so long ago that there wasn't like the media like there is now, and there definitely wasn't the social media like there is now. So maybe their son or brother or father, sister, cousin's death, you know, maybe nobody really knows about it because they didn't have the opportunity to.
We took on a project to work with the Woody Williams Foundation to bring a Gold Star family memorial to a veteran cemetery in Millsboro, Delaware, which is very close to where Kristen and Joey lived and were raised up. So we are about 80% through the fundraising on that, and hopefully we'll have the money by the end of the year, and next year we'll have the memorial actually erected and have a dedication and have a place where Gold Star families can go and have some solace and respect for those that had given their lives. Joey was very spiritual, and I think that helped him through his life process as he went through and grew up. He was extremely spiritual. And the other thing is, his whole life, he wanted to be in the military, and he did get a chance to go in the military and serve. And, I mean, he met his goal. I mean, I remember when Joey was 8 or 9 years old, he'd come to my house, and he would go in my closet, and he'd get out my dress green jacket, and he'd put it on, and he'd run around the house with it and say, I'm going to be a soldier, and I'm going to be like Pap, and I'm going to get all these medals and do this and that and the other thing. And, you know, he was able to do what he wanted to do, which was go into the military and serve his country. That was really important to him to do that.
Joe served 20 years. He's also a Gold Star grandfather, but he doesn't lead with that. And after listening to him, you'll understand why.
I tell people my daughter's a Gold Star mother when we have conversations. My wife carries pictures of Joey in her wallet, and anytime she has a chance to pull the pictures out and tell people about Joey, who he was and everything she does. But I don't really announce myself as a Gold Star grandparent, because it's really, I understand the concept and it's great, but it's really my daughter and my granddaughter, his sister, who should be in the limelight for being, you know, where they are in the Gold Star chain of command, I guess you want to call it.
To Joey, to Dimps, the quiet kid with the loud dimples, the second born who came into the world without a sound and left it without warning, a 3-sport athlete, a Yankee fan, a son who chose his mother's company over a Friday night out, a brother who was his sister's best friend, a grandson who put on his grandfather's dress greens at 8 years old and ran around the house already knowing exactly who he was going to be, a soldier who shattered his leg, fought through every doctor's visit and every waiver, and refused to let the Army tell him no, the number one driver, the kid they called Kez, the one who kept sneaking calls to his mom because some rules were worth breaking. To Joey, who died doing what he loved, on a training range in the desert, sitting up in a turret on the last morning of an exercise, just before sunrise. To Kristen, who got the call she didn't know was a call, who carries his foundation, his 5K, his memory, and his name forward every single day. Kristen said it best herself. He gave me more than he had to. More than the normal kid does. That's how we know exactly who he was. To Joe, who served 20 years so his grandkids could grow up on West Point and who now stands quietly behind his daughter so she can carry what's hers to carry. Grandparents grieve too. You're seen in this episode. To Alexis, who woke up that morning with a migraine she couldn't explain and somehow knew before anyone told her. And to every soldier in Joey's unit who flew home with him, who stood at his funeral, who told the stories his family hadn't yet heard. Thank you for bringing him back. Say his name, Private First Class Joseph Marquez Dimps. If Joey's story moved you, share this episode. Tell someone his name. That's how he stays here. Kristen is building the JM42 Foundation to support active duty service members, first responders, and their families. And the family is fundraising right now to build a Woody Williams Gold Star Families Memorial in Millsboro, Delaware. Links to both in the show notes. A special thank you to our Gold Star Story supporters, June Letendry, Jackie Mullins, Danielle Metal, Terry Mullins, Edie Howard, Bob and Pat Scott, Mary Jo Stoy, and Helen Krupp. If you'd like to support these stories, visit goldstarstoriesusa.com, buymeacoffee.com/goldstarstories. I'm Nick Letendry. Check in on your people, live with purpose, and always, always say their names.
There's never been a better time to get outside and experience the benefits of nature. Discover nearby trails and explore the outdoors with AllTrails. Download the free app today and find your outside.